flexibility, convenience, opportunity. Find your digital advantage in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, visit KeenelandDigital.com to learn more.
Good morning. It is 9:47 Wednesday, January 5th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And last year on our first show of the year, I made a bold prediction that this was going to be a great year. The problem? That was the morning of January 6th. So this year, I just hope everybody has fun and stays safe.
Good morning. It's Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. And after 2021, I think it's, and 2020 as well, I think it's worth noting that we're 5 days into 2022. We haven't had a crisis yet in horse racing. So it's going to be a great year, Joe.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And I promised my family that I would be more upbeat and positive going into 2022. But for the love of God, man, for sake, industry, we are screwing up big time. I can't believe it. It's like a humiliating kick in the crotch, not once, but twice.
I don't think John's ever dropped an F-bomb in the entirety of the show. That's how he starts 2022.
That's how upset I am about not only Gamine retiring, but about what we're going to talk about with USADA.
That's why he's in such a bad mood. The historic specter of Gamine is finally gone. I feel for you, buddy. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Make plans to attend the Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale, which has produced the likes of recent Matriarch winner Regal Glory. Starts January 10th and runs through January 13th. The catalog is now online at january.keeneland.com. So we start off the new year, unfortunately, with some bad news, but not entirely unpredictable news that the United States Anti-Doping Agency, which was supposed to come aboard through the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act and clean up our mess and unify the drug enforcement and policy in American racing, was unable to strike a deal with the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority to become the partner that cleans up the game. Just want to read the statement from Travis Tigert that he released. He said, after months of negotiations, we have been unable to enter an agreement in line with the requirements of the act, and one which would have given us a reasonable chance to put in place a credible and effective program. While we are obviously saddened by the outcome of at this stage, we tried our absolute best to find a way forward, but without success. And he left the door open slightly, maybe to USADA coming back in at some point. He said, we don't know what role, if any, USADA is going to have in this implementation going forward. This is super unfortunate, but unfortunately not all that surprising, because a certain intrepid host of the TDN Writers Room called this after our interview with Travis Tigert, and we were reacting to that interview. I believe we have that clip. Travis kept saying, if we take over, if we're in charge of this at the end. And how many times he said that kind of worried me, and it kind of seemed very ominous that he's expecting there to be so much pushback and so much watering down of the rules going forward that it's not going to be something that he and Tessa and the rest of USADA can stand behind. And that would be a tragedy, honestly.
Normally, I really like being right. It's like one of my favorite things in the world when I can say I was dead on right about something. But this time, I would have preferred to be wrong. And it's not something that I celebrate that this happened. It's a major bummer, and I think it's really ominous for the sport of racing and what it means going forward. But I'm curious what you guys think. Let's start with Bill.
Well, Joe, when you said a major bummer, I think you certainly downplayed it. This is a catastrophe, a crisis, pick words like that. And the real problem here is, where do we go from here? And the problem within the problem is there's no plan B. There's no other outfit. So if you run a restaurant and you can't come to agreement with Coke to be the official soft drink of your restaurant, just go to Pepsi. Maybe you can work out something with Pepsi. There is no such thing here. So as things stand now, I mean, the thing is just completely blown up. Now, I know that the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act dealt with more than just USADA and cleaning up the game. But let's face it, that's what everybody was really interested in. Everything else is a minor thing. You know, do we really care that now with Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, they're going to have the same Lasix rules in Iowa that they have in, Virginia? Who cares? Absolutely, who cares? So what do you do from here? And as I wrote in the TDN afterwards, and I don't know if there's any possibility of this or not, but the only possible solution is to have these two groups get together and settle whatever their differences are and bring USADA back into the fold. If that is practical or possible, I have no idea. Part of the problem is when this was announced, no one said in any sort of concrete terms, what was the impasse? Was it money? Was it rulemaking? What was it? So we don't know. But yeah, Joe, I mean, it was so discouraging because we got so excited about this. We really thought we're going to see a new era in horse racing. Now we're just right back to square one.
Yeah. And Bill, you used a very good analogy of running a restaurant and having other options with regard to who's going to furnish the soft drinks. I immediately thought of, you know, this is almost like being on your wedding day and standing in front of all your friends and family and loved ones. And just before you're about to walk down the aisle, your partner turns to you and says, you know what? Let's talk about that prenup. Like, you're so far down the road now at this point with this one partner that you don't have any negotiation, leverage. I mean, basically, you're either walking down the aisle at this point with whatever terms that can come up, or you're aborting and saying this can't work. And unfortunately, it looks like it's the latter, that, you know, we've gone down this road as an industry with the hopes and dreams of being able to hook our wagon to USADA, who, you know, again, every time we spoke to Travis Tigard at all, with his organization, I mean, they know what they're talking about. They know what they're talking about with regard to, to drug enforcement. They know about testing. They know about investigative measures. I mean, all the things that are, you know, light up in my heart as far as what we need to do to clean up the industry. And now we're kind of left, you know, standing at the altar by ourselves at this point. But, you know, there are other groups out there that do drug enforcement and testing. Obviously, you know, Major League Baseball, the NFL, the other major sports all, you know, use either they have something in-house or they more than likely outsource it to a third party. So there are other organizations, but this just seemed like such a good fit for us. It seemed like, you know, such an important, you know, person, an adult in the room that we talked about all the time, that had done it before, that had had a past performance and track history, of putting cheaters away in other industries and other sports. This just seemed like a perfect alignment, you know, of lining up the stars for everybody. But you know, we still have other things. Even if USADA came in and said, we're going to come back to the table and we're going to agree. OK. And Bill, you mentioned, is it money? Is it power? Is it legislation? It's probably all those things that they're not on board with. But we as an industry still don't know, A, how much the testing and investigative expenses are going to cost. And B, once we know what the cost, who the hell is paying for it? Like, we still haven't figured out those major things. And, you know, July 1st is right down the road. I mean, and this is going to be the law of the land, you know, starting this summer. And not only don't we know how to pay for it or what it's going to cost even, but we don't know who the adult in the room is going to be that's going to be orchestrating this whole organization. It is just a PR nightmare in a history of PR nightmares for our industry.
Yeah, and I wish we had gotten more detail. I wish we had gotten more explanation for why this agreement fell apart. And, you know, I think a part of it has to be money. And the fact that there was never really any framework for how this massive cost was going to be distributed throughout the industry. Now, honestly, like, I think that there's a little too much hand-wringing about that. And I get why the trainers and like the blue collar people in the industry are concerned about the cost of this falling on their backs. But in general, there's a lot of money in this industry. There is a ton of money. Don't act like this industry is starving at the very top levels. There are so many people with so much money to blow in this business that I refuse to believe that we couldn't figure out an equitable cost structure for this thing. I just think, you know, there isn't really necessarily the appetite for that from a lot of circles in this business. And, you know, I think there are legitimate concerns about the way that this is going to be created and enforced. I just think that, you know, for them to drop out, because it was still pretty early. We were talking about them taking over out of competition testing midway through 2022 and then race day testing in 2023. There was still time to hammer out the details of this agreement. And for them to drop out in December
I think is probably not a good sign of them being able to come back to the table and work out what it seemed to be pretty fundamental differences. Honestly, my first reaction from it was that racing is doomed. And I don't know how you come back from having this finally broad-based support for this kind of reform and then having it just disintegrate and go away. I don't know how you re-rally the troops to get something similar done in the future. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, there's in Dan Ross's article, he talked about, you know, working with the RMTC and RC to like get this kind of thing done. But, you know, it's just we've kind of had these groups for a long time and really have not gotten the ball rolling in a major way in terms of actually cleaning up the sport. So I can't help but be pessimistic about what this means going forward. And I wish it weren't the case, because I think there are a lot of reform-minded people in the business right now. I think a lot of people have gotten their heads out of their asses finally and realized that we are teetering off the edge of a cliff here in racing. But, you know, if you don't have the right cops on the beat, you can have all the good intentions in the world and it's not going to matter. The cheaters are still going to find a way to get through this patchwork system as they have been for decades. And, you know, I wonder from you guys what you think happens going forward. Do you think there's a realistic chance that USADA comes back to the table? This is all speculation, but, you know, I just give us something to grasp onto here, because I think there was some optimism, you know, towards the end of 2021 and it all just dissipated.
Joe, I mean, it's a good question. I have no idea if USADA is, you know, completely pulled the plug and walked away, or this is maybe some sort of ploy that they're using to get a better deal or something like that. But if it's not USADA, no matter what it is, it's not going to be good enough, not even going to be nearly good enough. So right now you're looking at only two choices. You're looking at USADA or a return to the status quo. And I unfortunately think that, you know, and so what they do the RMTC and they get this involved and they do this and that, it's not going to be any good. It's not going to work. You're going to go right back to where you were. So, is this going to doom horse racing? You know, I wouldn't say that, but I think we're going to have to continue to live with a game that we know is all, you know, tainted by people cheating. So, I think that's the future here. Unfortunately, I think the future is probably just a return to the status quo. And we all, you know, shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, you know, what do we do now?
Yeah, Joe, unfortunately, I think it's going to be the status quo. And I think that, you know, the industry is going to continue to die in the vine, whether it's because people are cheating in racing or because the gene pool is shrinking or because the full crop is shrinking, because we can't get new fans to come in and be interested in the sport, whether it's just wagering or owning, you know, it's continuing to narrow our industry, both in number of horses and in number of people who want to put up the money to buy the horses. And I think there's always going to be, I did a lot of soul searching after being upset and annoyed about this announcement. I did a lot of soul searching and said, you know, here I am as an individual, I've invested 40 plus years of my life into this sport. And you guys obviously have also, invested an equal percentage of your lives because we love the sport. We're addicted to it, good or bad. We're addicted to it. And we're trying to do the right thing for the industry. And unfortunately, I just don't feel like that there's enough, you know, energy behind that statement by the powers that be, even so much so that, like, when USADA was going to be named as the broker of this, as the adult in the room that we like to say, there were still groups of horsemen that were fighting it, legally fighting it, to try to make sure that we didn't have a centralized group of rules and regulations and penalties. And that blows my mind that people are so short-sighted to be willing to keep the status quo. So you know what? It looks like we're going to have the status quo. And every year we're going to be reduced in the number of people involved and the amount of money that's involved until the point where we look back and say, oh, we could have made a change for the better. And we could have made a change to improve the horses and the racing and the betting, you know, product and all those things. And it went by the wayside because we as an industry couldn't get our crap together And make it so. And you know, not that the horse industry is the same as you know, the global issues like for climate, but it's almost like the climate issue where, you know, for years and years and years, people said, scientists and environmentalists said, hey, you know, we got to stop doing this. We have to stop doing this. And if we don't do it by a certain point, then it will pass the point of no return. And most of the nation said, it's too expensive. I'm not going to do that. And now we're almost at the point of no return. Well, as an industry, I think we're at the point of no return. If we can't get somebody, I hope it's USADA, but if it's not, if we can't get somebody to come in and police us, then we're just going to be, you know, doomed to be a shell of what we've been, you know, over the past decades.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. As I mentioned, the Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale is right around the corner. It's next week, January 10th through the 13th. You can find the catalog at january.keeneland.com. It's less than a week away. Last week, Keeneland announced the addition of 7 supplements to the catalog, including Math Wizard, who, if you remember, won the 2019 Pennsylvania Derby. They also announced that the final offering of the opening session on Monday will include a 2022 no guarantee season to this year's leading first crop sire, Gunrunner. The season will be auctioned to raise funds for people affected by the recent catastrophic tornadoes in Western Kentucky. So shout out to Ron Winchell and people at Three Chimneys for sponsoring that. And with these latest supplements, the January sale catalog now consists of a total of 1,626 lots, something for everybody. So definitely get involved. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
Start the new year strong at the Keeneland January Horses of All Ages sale. Make the most of your 2022. With a new year comes new, exciting opportunities at Keeneland. Be there at the first sale of the year, beginning January 10th.
Respect the law. He's earned it. A Grade 1 winning juvenile.
Tis the law, pops the cork in the champagne.
A classic winning 3-year-old.
Tis the law is gonna win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
5 triple digit buyers.
Respect the law, tis the law.
The best son of Red Hot Sire Constitution.
He's left the others behind. He's gonna win the run, Happy Travers.
Tis the law.
The TDN Writers Room was brought to you by Coolmore. Munnings, always very popular and in the news. Munnings is off to a great start in 2022 with 3 stakes winners on Saturday. The TDN Rising Star Shahama in the UAE 1000 Guineas Trial, Sir Alfred James in the Holiday Cheer Stakes, and then undefeated Dash Attack in the Smarty Jones Stakes, who I think we're going to talk about a little bit later. Another potential Derby contender for Ken McPeak. Another Ashford sire who's off to a great start this year is, guess who? Cupid! The new unofficial mascot of the show. We talk about Cupid every week, and with good reason. He recorded his 24th winner on Saturday when Mouse High won a maiden special weight at Turfway. He finished in the top 5 freshman sires in multiple categories in 2021, and he stands for just $5,000 this year. Think about it. Just to pick up on that conversation from the last segment, John mentioned the HBPAs that are against this. I thought it was really funny. You know, this is why I don't read the comments on YouTube. Last time on the show, I was like, I would love to have one of these guys on the show and talk about it. And let's have a discussion. Let's hear your side of it. And someone in the comments was like, why don't you have someone on the show instead of just yelling at them every week? It's like, that's exactly what I suggested. And, you know, one of the candidates could be Eric Hamelbeck. We'll be happy to talk to him. He's the NHBA president. I think it's NHBPA. This might be a typo. The National HBPA, NHBPA. I get them a little confused sometimes. Well, let's hear his statement in reaction to the announcement that USADA would not be coming on board. Quote, the National HBPA continues to stand steadfast behind our belief that the HISA Act is, first of all, HISA Act is, it's redundant. The A is for Act. Anyway, is an unconstitutional delegation of authority to a private organization. With that said, after the events announced today, we hope members of the authority take into strong consideration partnering with an enforcement agency that understands the nuances of the horse racing industry and recognizes the significant positive strides this industry has made in both safety and integrity. Now would be a perfect opportunity for the authority to mesh the safety regulations that have been put forth with the best of the model rules currently established throughout the United States. And my question is, what are those rules that are working so well?
Please tell me the model rules that are doing so well in racing right now to catch cheaters and to give the appearance of a cleaner sport, which we supposedly all want. That's always been my issue. I'm not saying that the HBPAs don't have any legitimate gripes or legitimate concerns. I'm sure they do, especially in terms of cost. But there is never any specific argument for the current system or even for a different system than USADA coming in. There's never any kind of, you know, pointing at, here's what we're doing well. Here's who would be better to take the reins than USADA. You know, I get the idea that USADA doesn't have a horse racing background, and you might be a little bit concerned someone coming in from outside. But I don't know. We talked to Travis Tiger multiple times. We talked to Tessa Muir. There's plenty of smart people that they have who know the business, who are trying to come in and do the right thing. I think it's just a cop-out and a catch-all to say, well, they don't know racing. They don't have a racing background. We need someone with a racing background. I don't know. My issue is the same as it always been with these kind of statements and the lawsuits. What is your alternative? And we never get it. We never get any specific alternative. And it just seems like you're protecting the status quo because it's been good for you. Bill, John, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, Joe. You know, look in the mirror and you should say, are things okay now? And no logical, rational person could say they are okay. So therefore, they need to change. USADA comes in. Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act comes in with a major agent of change. We're going to blow this thing up, and it's going to make it a lot different. I just want to mirror everything you say. What is your solution then? We never hear anything about that. And if you don't offer any solutions, then it only leads me to believe that you're okay with the status quo. And how anybody can be okay with the status quo is beyond me. As a matter of fact, and I've said and written this before, I think horsemen's groups, and some are, it's not universal among the horsemen's groups. I mean, for instance, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association is in favor of HISA, but horsemen's groups should be more on board with this than perhaps anybody else, because every time a guy cheats and wins a race, he's stealing money from an honest horseman. And that is what has to stop. That is, to me, one of the biggest problems with all this. And, you know, so I think Eric Hamelbacks of the world should be out there leading the charge to make this happen. I don't get it. I don't understand. Maybe it's just because people don't like change. Maybe they are okay with the status quo. I don't know how anybody could be. Maybe they are.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat that horse. I mean, last show that we did, I went on a rant and talked about how disappointing it was, not only that you're not in favor of this, but if you're not in favor of it, tell us what you are in favor of. Give us a plan, you know, by rote, exactly what you want to implement and who you want to have police it, and then see if that's any better. You know what? If it is better, great. Then the industry will be better. But don't just continue to throw, you know, I use the term, you know, don't piss on my Cheerios and not have an alternative. And right now, we don't have a good alternative.
And the thing is, like, it is a massive undertaking to try to get all of this all this mess that we have in American racing under one umbrella and to unify the drug enforcement and the drug policy. It's a huge undertaking. So it's not as if any, you know, half-assed group or organization can come off the sidelines and just pick this up and say, okay, now we got it. You need someone who has the kind of infrastructure and the kind of connections that USADA has in the first place. That's why it was such a blessing and such a godsend that USADA was even considering getting involved with us in the first place, because you can't just have anybody do this. It needs to be someone with the credibility that they've done it on a world stage or even on a sort of national stage. There's a reason that nobody else has been able to do this. And I think there are people in the industry who have tried to get this house in order, but they just can't do it because they don't have the wherewithal. They don't have the clout, honestly, that USADA has. And that was apparent from the jump. So yeah, I agree that there's never been any alternative proffered from these horsemen's groups to say, here's what we should do to clean up the game. We don't think that this is the right thing. Here's the way to go. And again, I think it's because they too many people have benefited from the status quo. And like Bill says, you know, if you're a small to mid-level trainer, this should be your number one goal, is to get this stuff in order and to get this stuff together so that the people who are cheating you and are stealing money from you finally get what's coming to them. And we saw one of them. We saw one guy get what was coming to him. We're going to talk about him a little later in Jorge Navarro. But there are a ton of other bad apples in this industry. Some of them have been on this show that everybody knows are taking an edge and are, you know, gaming the system. And you should, as a small to mid-level trainer, you should want them to be found out and to be flushed out of the game. And I don't understand, like, well, maybe it's the nature of unions and these like union boards and these union presidents that, you know, they speak for everybody. They don't necessarily speak for everybody, you know, in effect, but they speak for everybody when they put out these statements. And I just think there got to be so many people in those unions and those associations that just, you know, they feel like they're getting screwed. And maybe they've been convinced that this is not the way to rectify that. But, you know, there's never any alternative. And that's the frustrating part, is that we're all, you know, no one's saying that this is going to be easy. No one's saying that reform is going to be easy and it's going to be turbulent and there's going to be starts and stops. But if you don't even have the right people in place to control it and to have the right authority in place to really set everything, set all the rules and unify everything, then you got nothing. If you don't have that entity, you don't have anything. And right now, we got nothing. We got some safety reforms, which is nice, but a bunch of tracks are doing that on their own anyway. This was the crux. This was the meat on the bone of HISA, was USADA getting involved and taking over the drug enforcement. And now we don't have that. So now we don't have a hell of a lot. And it's unfortunate, too, in the way that, you know, we talked to Tom Rooney about this on our last show of the year, having that case to make, having that story to tell when something tragic happens, where you can say, this is tragic, this is terrible, but the industry has gone under a massive revolution of reform. Here is what we're doing. We've gotten these people that have so much credibility and so much clout to come in and fix the game for us. It's just not going to happen now, and it's beyond unfortunate that we don't have that story to tell anymore. We can't say, yeah, things are a little messy sometimes, but here's what we're doing to fix it. The other unfortunate thing about it is, you know, we talked about this with Tom Rooney on the last show of the year, is to have kind of a positive PR push in racing when we do have scandals and we do have controversies and, you know, catastrophic things like Medina Spirit dying. It would behoove us to have something to point to and say, you know, yeah, this is tragic. And unfortunately, stuff like this still happens in racing. But here is the massive revolution of reform that we're going through right now to make sure stuff like this doesn't happen as often. We can't even point to that anymore. We can't even say that we're trying our best to make everything better and to make everything safer, because we're not doing that anymore. And, you know, maybe that'll change down the line and USADA will come back aboard, or some other unknown entity will take the reins. But yeah, we can't even credibly say that we're doing everything we can to protect the horses and make racing drug free, because we're not doing that anymore. And that's a real shame, because I think there are a lot of reform minded people in the business right now, a lot of people who have gotten their stuff together on this and have gotten behind this, but we can't credibly say that we're doing our best anymore. And that's a real shame. That's a real shame. The PDN Writers Room is brought to you by Lane's End Farm. The Lane's End Stallion of the Week this week is The Factor, son of Warfront, who stands for $17,500 this year. In 2021, he had multiple graded stakes winner Charmaine's Mia, as well as grade 2 Shakertown stakes winner Bound for Nowhere, and he was a top 10 general sire in America in 2020. We'll be right back after this message from Lane's End Farm.
Connect, the next in line to carry on Lane's End's tried and true stallion tradition. A grade 1 winning millionaire son of Curlin, physically impressive and dominant on the track. Winner of the grade 1 Cigar Mile and the grade 2 Pennsylvania Derby, where he defeated Gunrunner, Nyquist, and Exaggerator. With multiple six-figure yearlings in his first crop, up to $360,000. Connect, a proven winner on the track, a proven stallion in the making.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. 2021 Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner, Life is Good, is this week's workout of the week. He worked 5 furlongs at Palm Beach Downs on New Year's Eve. It was his 3rd work there in December as he prepares for his next start in the Pegasus World Cup, which is looking to be a pretty awesome showdown with Classic winner Nix Go. See if they go at each other early. That should be super, super exciting. And it's always great to see those big-time 3-year-olds working towards their 4-year-old campaign, and we hope for a long and very impressive campaign from Life is Good in 2022, so we're looking forward to that. And as always, if you want to see those contenders working for their big races, check out xbtv.com. So we got all the nasty stuff out of the way, and you know we're going to be whistling past the graveyard continually until something comes about and we have someone come clean up our mess. But that doesn't mean that there aren't great performances on the racetrack to celebrate and to talk about. And I don't know if you could find a more exciting performance than what Flightline did in the Malibu on December 26th. This was, honestly, it was hard for him to live up to the hype because there was so much hype and so much juice on him going into the, not juice in the pejorative sense, juice in terms of, just to be clear, juice in terms of enthusiasm around him. Going into this race, like off of his first 2 races, like he could not have been more impressive. And the Malibu was a pretty good field. Like, I don't think there were any other superstars in the race, but it was not, you know, a low level, you know, 4-horse Grade 1 like we see sometimes throughout the year. And man, did he go fast and keep going and just was galloping through the stretch. And we're going to talk to Flavien Prat in a little bit about him and just how exciting can a horse possibly be. This is a little blasphemous for me because he's my favorite horse of all time. And I think is the fastest horse of the 20th century. 21st century, rather. I haven't seen a horse this good, this impressive, this potential laden since Ghost Zapper. And, you know, I hope that Flightline can stick around. You know, Ghost Zapper, the only thing about him was that he didn't run all that often. He ran only, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. I've seen some quotes from John Sadler about how they're going to be very, very careful with him, which I get, which I totally understand. But at the same time, if the horse is sound, like this is a horse you need to share with the world, because he's just one of a kind. He's a generational talent. He got a 118 buyer in the Malibu when, like I said, just basically cantering throughout the entire stretch. I posted a screenshot on my Twitter after the race of him on the gallop out, just how far he is ahead of everyone on the gallop out. That to me was what was so amazing, is not just how fast he is, but how effortless he looks when he's running. I don't know. You tell me, guys. Well, who's the last horse that got you this excited?
Boy, Joe, that's a good question. I mean, the analogies to Ghost Zapper are very appropriate because he looks like he's going to have not only that kind of ability, but maybe that unfortunate, that kind of campaign with just a few races here and there. You know, that's one of the sidebars to this. If he stays sound, we're probably going to get to see him 7-8 times in his entire life, which is such a shame. But again, you know, that's the way the game is played these days. You know, I think in some respects, you're afraid to go overboard. You don't want to be the guy that overhyped a horse. You don't want to be a guy who, after he runs 7th in the Met Mile, you look back and you look silly because you said this was the greatest thing since Farlap or whatever. But I'm not afraid to believe that this could be one of the greatest horses we've ever seen in our lifetimes. I mean, what we saw on the racetrack was, as you said, it's even hard to put into words. It was absolutely phenomenal running away from a good field. I mean, Dr. Scheibel, I know he didn't run his race, but he lost the Breeders' Cup Sprint by a nose, and was a Grade 1 winner beating older horses. And he just, I mean, not only beat him by a lot of lengths, but did so completely effortlessly. You know, who does he compare to? Yeah, Ghost Zapper. Who knows? Maybe he'll be proved to be better than that. You know, that's what is so phenomenal about this. It's the possibilities of what this horse is and what he can do and what we're seeing are limitless. And we shouldn't be afraid to say, yeah, hey, I mean, you know, when we're all older and grayer, you know, and we sit back 25, 30 years from now, we can say, boy, remember that Flightline? He was maybe the best I ever saw. Now, I know that's going to come back and haunt me to say that, but you know what? I didn't say he's the best we've ever saw, but I'm saying it's possible that we someday could be making those statements, like people said about Franklin.
When you watch a race like that, and this is what we should be talking about first and foremost, is just the impressiveness of our athletes when they are at the peak of their game. And Flightline was a $1 million horse at auction. bred, you know, royally, you know, Tappet, who was one of the best sires of our generation, out of an Indian Charlie mare. Indian Charlie only had a couple of crops, but he is, you know, stamping himself as an important gene pool in our industry as well. And when you get them together and you get this kind of an athlete who can do what he did, which is go out and break easy 22.44, 108.3, and still finish up in a sub 12, you know, last furlong in a hand ride, it sends shivers down your spine. And I was trying to remember other races where I stood there, or other times where I stood there and was just in awe of a horse. And, you know, Ghost Zapper, when I was there when he won the Island in a hand ride, you know, at Monmouth Park. And granted, that wasn't a grade one, and it certainly wasn't a grade one caliber group, you know, like what Flightline just ran against. But it was that kind of awe-inspiring race. Obviously, you know, you can look back and my favorite horse, Gamine, you know, when she broke the track record in the sprint a couple of years ago at Keeneland, and there were four grade one winners in that race. I mean, that was an impressive win for her after an awkward start as well. But the other time that I can honestly remember getting goosebumps standing on the rail at a racetrack watching a horse perform was Unbridled Song as a two-year-old at the Under Tack show. And here's a horse that only went an eighth of a mile, okay, and went in 10 seconds, which in today's day and age, you say, big deal. Everyone goes in 10 seconds, you know, 10 and one. It's not a big deal. But he was the first one that went 10 flat, and everyone was hand timing it. And I remember just everyone holding their breath, looking at their clocks, comparing it to other people's stopwatches to see if they also got 10 seconds flat. And the comment that that the announcer made when Unbridled Song hit the wire in 10 seconds flat, he said, 10 seconds, Unbridled Song, and the horse moved so effortlessly that the trees swayed. And that was like one of those seminal moments in my mind of just an athlete just outperforming anyone's expectations. So, you know, Unbridled Song going an eighth of a mile, okay. You know, Ghost Zapper winning the Island against not a great, you know, necessarily field at Monmouth that year, okay. Gamine winning the Breeders' Cup, you know, sprint, Philly Mare sprint and breaking a track record. And then I really feel like that Flightline supersedes all of those races. And the only other thing I can say right now of a horse that, you know, I wasn't there to witness it. I've only seen video was, you know, when Secretariat won the Belmont by 30 plus lengths to cap, you know, his horse of the year campaign at that point. And that to me would have been a little bit better of a performance than maybe Flightline. But Flightline still, this is only his third race of his career. And he still has, as Bill so curmudgeonly said, only seven or eight more races. Well, hopefully we'll love those seven or eight more races, and they'll continue to build and grow and do the right thing, you know, by the horse, by you know, spotting him, you know, in the right kind of races. And I hope the horse does continue to improve and fulfill his destiny, because, you know, you don't see it too many times where you buy a horse for $1 million or more and they actually, you know, they go past,
it's a bargain.
They exceed their, yeah, this expectation. Yeah. This is only his third race of his career, guys. I mean, he's got a lot of racing ahead of him, hopefully. And I just can't wait to sit by, and it's going to be must-see TV every time he runs.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many times where the $1 million seems like a massive bargain.
Right.
You know, sometimes maybe you'll feel like, okay, well, I got my money's worth. This seems like a major, major bargain. And, you know, the problem is, like, I kind of wish he wasn't a $1 million horse. I kind of wish he was, you know, a $20,000 horse by a stallion who is not necessarily as fancy, because he's going to be so valuable. And the more he does that, it's just at a certain point, it's not going to make financial sense to keep running him when he's worth so much money. And that's the problem. And, you know, Bill was saying seven or eight times total, I think,
Yeah, John, he's not going to race
He's only going to have
a handful of races then, because this time next year, he'll be standing at stud somewhere. So really, it's through November, basically.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, and I get it. And I understand the economics of the business. But if you want to talk about, you know, legend, if you want to talk about the legends of the game, and John, you brought up Secretariat. People are going to be very mad at you for bringing up Secretariat.
I didn't say he was as good as Secretariat. I got you.
I just think some people are going to hear Secretariat and be like, see red and bring out the pitchforks for you. So I'm just warning you about that. But if you think about Secretariat and the horses of the past,
they ran a lot more. You know, obviously everyone remembers Secretariat's Belmont, but he ran a bunch of other great races that established him as like the greatest of the 20th century. And, you know, horses right now, nowadays, they don't even get that opportunity. And that's the unfortunate part about it, is that, you know, Flightline, you know, pound for pound talent wise, it's him and Gosapper. That's it for me in terms of horses that I've seen. And I've been watching racing since the early 2000s. That's the only two. But is Flightline going to stick around long enough to even have Gosapper's level of achievement? Because Gosapper won the Breeders' Cup Classic. He was Horse of the Year. He won the Met Mile. You know, that's what remains to be seen. But nevertheless, you start your career 105 buyer, 114 buyer, 118 buyer, and a canter. There's nothing to say other than he is brilliant to find. And John Sadler said next he's going to try to stretch him out a little bit to a mile or a mile and a 16th. We'll see what kind of spot that ends up being. Like, I don't know if they want to go to the Saudi Cup or the Dubai World Cup just yet. Probably going to bring him along a little bit more slowly. But good luck getting anybody to show up to race against him, unless it's for, you know, seven figures and up, because I don't think anybody wants to get annihilated like the horses he beat in the Malibu.
Joe, let me just interrupt for 1 second, because you mentioned we keep comparing him to Gosapper and everything like that. I think the analogy is even closer than you think. Joe and Bill, do you know how many times, without looking it up, do you know how many times Gosapper ran?
Probably like 10 max, 9 or 10.
Yeah, he ran 11 times in his career. So if this horse runs 7 or 8 more times, he's also going to have a 10 or 11 race career. I mean,
you keep saying that. That's not going to happen. He's not going to run 7 or 8 times more.
No. 7 or 8 more times from now would be great. Right. I think Bill was saying total. I don't want to get bogged down on that. I don't want to focus on the negative here. I want to focus on the positive of having a horse like this for everyone to be able to see, because he is something special. And that's the reason that I think, you know, you might want to run him more and might want to send him around the country to different racetracks, because, you know, especially now with the business being in such a precarious position, and a lot of people feeling really bad, I think justifiably so, about the direction of the industry. Horses like this are what remind people of why they are passionate about the game and why they follow the game. To watch the kind of brilliance that we saw in the Malibu, like, it sends chills up your spine. And I want to give a shout out to Katie too, our associate producer, who did a story in today's TDN with April Mayberry of Mayberry Farm, who helped raise Flightline when he was a yearling. Thought it was a great story and had a lot of great quotes in it. And it's just he's the kind of horse that everybody can rally around and the appointment viewing. And I think Frankel is a good comparison too, Bill. I don't want to slight our Euro viewers and listeners, because he's the last horse I remember having that kind of buzz. But yeah, it was phenomenal to watch, and we'll be grateful for every time we see him run, however many times that may be. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Three Chimneys. We mentioned earlier that Three Chimneys is offering a 2022 no guarantee season to Gunrunner to benefit those affected by the tornadoes in Western Kentucky at the upcoming Keeneland January sale. So shout out to them for helping the cause. Gunrunner was the leading first crop sire last year, as we know, with top performers, including Breeders' Cup champion and presumptive Eclipse of champion Echo Zulu, hopeful winner Gunite, Breeders' Cup juvenile runner-up Papa Cap as well. Stands for a fee of $125,000 in 2022. I'm sure breeders are beating down the door even at that price. John, I know you run against a couple of gun runners.
Yeah,
recently.
No, we've seen the ass end of a lot of really good gun runners in the past 6 months. It's unbelievable. We ran against a $400,000 yearling called American Icon that's owned by Windstar and some other partners, and he just ran us off our feet. He won at Gulfstream, and then at the other major race circuits, Cyberknife won very impressively at the Fairgrounds. McLaren Vale and Flying Drummer both won at Santa Anita. So Gunrunner, again, as a racehorse owner, you look at the Gunrunners and you say, wow, they're winning all over the place. And then if I put my breeder's hat on, we tried to get a couple of seasons to Gunrunner. And my understanding is that he is basically sold out at $125,000, which is really, really impressive. So he's one of the top young up and coming stallions in our industry. And, Sonic Candy Ride, he is just exploding all over the scene. And Joe and Bill, you got to figure that if his falls are anything like Gunrunner himself, they're only going to get better.
Yeah, I mean, and that's going to be the story, one of the stories to watch this year as well, to see how those horses do with three-year-olds and then into their four-year-old seasons. And just to piggyback off the last conversation we were talking about, we might not see Flightline more than 8 or 9 times. Gunrunner and Runner ran 19 times. 19 times with 12 wins. That's, you know, by this generation standards, that's an iron horse, and he was there for a lot of big dances as well. So he definitely had that durability in addition to his brilliance. So definitely, if you can get to Gunrunner, get to him. I think the spots are pretty filled, though. So we'll be right back after this message from Three Chimneys.
Anybody going? 70 getting 50, getting 75. 850, 75, 175, 175, 150, 175. Sprout, 850,000. Thank you.
Volatile, just like that. In front by 3, now by 4. And the time, 107.57.
As they pass the 16th pole, Volatile, victorious in the Vanderbilt. 1 by 2 lengths.
Sprout, 850,000. Thank you.
Idol perfectly timed. Idol gets up under Joel Rosario to win the big gap.
It's Known Agenda for St. Elias Stable.
Grace Adler, a scintillating performance in the TBG Delmar debutant.
And Clariere will win the cotillion.
Down to the wire. Who's going to win it? It's Mala by a neck.
Curling, the classic sire.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Hillendale. Hillendale sire Violence was represented by Sham winner Newgrange over the weekend, as well as Queen of Thorns, who won on debut for trainer Peter Erden. Violence stands for a fee of $25,000 this year. Another Hillendale sire with a great stakes winner already this year is Kitten's Joy, my favorite turf sire of all time, whose daughter Luck won the Grade 3 Robert Frankel Stakes at Santa Anita for owner breeder LNJ Foxwoods. And Gamine, who we talked about before, it's I feel very sad for John that he's losing Gamine to retirement. She obviously had a tremendous career, 9 wins and 11 starts, 5-time Grade 1 winner, champion. She's actually going to be retired to Hillendale. Breeding plans are still being discussed right now, but she's going to be boarding at Hillendale in the meantime. So great career to Gamine, and another feather in the cap at Hillendale to have her there. Now we're going to go to our interview from yesterday with Flavien Pratt. Flavien obviously had a monster weekend, 6 wins on Saturday at Santa Anita, not a hotter jockey in Southern California, and we had a good time talking to Flavien. So here's our interview from yesterday with Flavien Pratt. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're beyond thrilled this week to welcome the man of the hour in California, fresh off a 6-win day on Saturday, Flavien Pratt. Thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. Great to meet you guys.
It's great. It's great to talk to you. You know, I've been a big fan of yours for a while. I think you're pound for pound one of the best riders in the country. But I wanted to ask a little bit about your history, because a lot of people don't know or remember that you were champion apprentice jockey in France in 2009. And then things didn't really quite take off for you in France. And then you came over to the U.S. in 2015. And it seems kind of like you're an overnight superstar. Can you talk a little bit about that, about your transition from France to the U.S. and why things are working out so much better here?
Well, as you said, I was an apprentice in France. So things were going pretty well, and then of course I lost my allowance, and then from that point I got a little harder. But I mean I was doing fine, not good enough. I had a few graded stakes win, but it was just not what I was hoping. And at the time, I was coming every winter, to Santa Anita to, get some experience and see different thing. And there's a point where I decide to stay in the country. Obviously, I was, riding for Mr. Mandela a little bit. So it definitely helped make a decision.
I just want to ask a follow-up on that, John, real quick, if I can. Yeah. Yeah. Was there anything about your riding style that you had to change from France to the U.S., or did you still kind of ride the same way?
Well, you have to adapt. Obviously, yeah, you have to adapt. It's in Europe, there's only grass and potty track. So it's pretty much, you know, a different way of riding than the dirt. So I had to learn, you know, a few things on the dirt, but I really love dirt races. So it was something that I enjoy doing it and I still do.
And when you come to the States and you have a day like you did on New Year's Day, where I can honestly say, after being in the business for 40 years, I've never seen a day like this before, where every single one of your mounts, you finished first or second, including winning the Frankel, which is a grade three, and the La Canada, which was also a grade three. Do you just, like other athletes, do you get into a zone where you're like, every decision I make, I just feel really good about? Like, walk us through that day, those 6 hours at the racetrack where you never finished worse than second. I've never seen that before. It was great.
Well, in that particular day, I didn't feel like I was in the zone. I just felt like I had before the races, you could see my ride. I had some really good ride. It felt like I could have a good day. So that's what happened. But there's days where, yeah, you definitely feel in the zone, and you know, no matter what you're gonna do, it's gonna go your way. I've just felt like I was on the right horses, in the right race, and it went my way. So it was nice. It was really nice to. It was really a good way to start the year. Six races. It's something that it's really hard to do. But everything went my way. I was on good horses, and it was a great day.
Yeah, and you rode, you know, some sprinters, some distance, some turf, some dirt. When you look at the entries and you're doing your pre-race analysis, you know, are there times where you're like, oh, I can't wait to get on this horse because I love this horse or because I love this distance? Do you have a preferred running style? Like walk us through that when you're about to leg up onto a horse, what your feeling is like when you have that kind of confidence.
I don't have a running style that I like most. I just try to ride my horse with his ability and try to find out, you know, what he likes to do and what he doesn't like to do. That's pretty much it. Like I say, I really love dirt races in general. I just love the way the race unfold and the way the race are developing. I think it's there's right from the gate go, there's a, you know, there's something to watch, and it's really interesting. But that's my personal opinion. But in general, no, I don't have a, you know, preference style. No.
I got a stat for you. Flavian has ridden 6 winners at Santa Anita 3 times in the past year. Before that, it happened twice total in 30 years at Santa Anita. So that tells you the kind of role that he's on right now. I want to change gears and talk about Flightline, because I think that's the horse that everybody wants to talk about. Everybody's excited. I see the smile coming on your face, just bringing him up. I can't blame you for that. But just, you know, what's your impression of him? Because he's a horse that I think is a generational talent. Like, I don't think we've seen a horse like him in a long time. Just talk about how lucky you feel and how you feel riding him. What must it be like?
Well, as you can imagine, the impressions are good. Just a great, great animal. Just really athletic, powerful. He has about everything. You know, he has speed. He has, it seems like he has stamina as well. So, it's just a pleasure to ride him. Try to enjoy every moment. And it's fun. It's, you never know what the future can bring for him. It's great. You know, sky is the limit with him.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever, like, I feel like people ask this about to jockeys a lot. Do you feel like you're going faster on him than on other horses? Can you really feel the difference?
Well, no, that's the thing. Actually, you don't feel you go as fast as you go, because it's like, it's like driving a car. When you're driving a good car, you on the freeway, 80 miles per hour, and feels like you're going slow, right? Well, good horses, it's pretty much the same, because it's so effortless, you know, what they're doing. So it's actually the opposite. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. And you've ridden so many good horses, especially of late. And one of them that was of interest to us here in New Jersey is Hot Rod Charlie, because, you know, when he ran in the Haskell and and ultimately, you know, got taken down. But really, he was the best horse in the race, you know, based on what we've seen. Talk a little bit about that race, Hot Rod Charlie, and also just give our listeners an idea of, do you think having a whip in the hand would have made things different for you in that race?
Yes, it probably will make a difference. Now, I mean, you know, when you go there, you know the rule. And, you know, if you're not agree with the rule, then just don't go there. I went there, you know, and there was no whip. Things happen. I mean, to be honest, yes, it probably would have changed because I would have gotten my stick on the left. The thing is that, you know, when I went by Midnight, what's his name?
Midnight Murder.
My horse kind of stopped a little bit, kind of wait and shift to his left. So by doing that, obviously he clipped my heel. If I have my stick, maybe I change it to the left. I give him a tap. He'll just keep his focus. He runs straight and nothing happened. That's we're never going to know. Happen what happened. Yes, obviously it felt like he was the best horse, but it happened so many times where the best horse didn't win. And that's actually why your races are so interesting, I guess. It probably would have changed, but you know, I went there knowing the rule and I had no problem going there with the rule. So it is what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually I wanted to follow up on that because, you know, some people say that not having the whips can actually make racing more dangerous because you can't control the horses as well. Where do you fall on that, on that whip debate? Do you think it does help you avoid spills and avoid horses bearing out? Or do you think it's overrated how much the whip matters?
No, I think it matters. I think, you can see, I think Malmsport has had a lot of incident this year. And I'm pretty sure it's part of that. I think the whip needs to be we need a whip. We need it for guidance. I mean, it's in every equestrian sport there's whip. In most equestrian sport, riders can use their legs. We are riding so short, we have no legs, right? We only have our hand and the whip. The hand and the whip. So that's the only connection we can make with the horse. And so we need that. I think it's been a great thing that there's a limitation as far as how many times you can tap a horse and encourage him. I think that's great. I think there was some regulation that needs to be placed and it was placed, but no whip, I think it's just too extreme.
Yep. And one of the things that we've also seen over the course of the past couple of years are horses coming over from Europe and doing their best running here in the States. Can you give us an idea of what your, why you think that is, why so many Euros are coming here? I'm talking about the horses are coming here and are competing so well here in the States.
No, that's a good question. I mean, I think as far as the grass races, you know, Euro are so specialized on that. So it's probably a big help. As far as medication, there's no more medication anymore. So I don't think that's an edge. I that's a question I can't really answer.
If you knew the answer, then we wouldn't even air it. We would take it for ourselves and buy the horses ourselves. It's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like I said, the only thing is that, you know, as far as grass, the horses are so specialized for that. So it might help, you know. That's about it, because I don't see any difference otherwise.
Is there a racetrack from Europe or specifically from France that you miss riding at in comparison to here?
Well, I really enjoy riding in Longchamp, obviously. It's one of the best racetrack in France, Longchamp, and I like Saint-Cloud as well. Chantilly, if, I don't know if you've ever been to Chantilly, it's just a beautiful place. Right. But in general, I mean, you know, I'm right. Santa Anita is, I mean, it's outstanding. It's just, I don't think you can beat Santa Anita. So I'm pretty grateful that I'm riding in California.
Yeah. Well, that leads me into my next question, because I was gonna make my case for you to come to New York. You know, as a born and bred New Yorker, I think there are very few guys outside of New York who could really hang in that colony. And I think you're one of those guys. You do well when you come to New York. I feel like you've written a lot more for Chad Brown in recent years. So you got those connections coming up. Obviously, things are going great in California. But would you ever consider coming and taking your shot in New York?
Well, it's an option that, I have in my mind. As of right now, I'm really happy where I am. But it could be an option. It's something that, you know, we can think about it and maybe make a move. Yeah.
And just one more question for me. You had the Derby win via DQ on Country House. Obviously, that was great and that was exciting. But do you feel like you still need that first across the wire Derby win to get that true feeling?
Well, I mean, it'll be a definitely a different feeling. I mean, regardless how the Derby has been won, I mean, the goal is to win another one. I mean, it's just the way it is. I definitely want to win another Derby, and it's one of my goals. Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, well, we might have you on again, and I'll make my case once again to get you over to New York, because I'd love to see it. I'd love to see you up at Saratoga. But things are going so well out in California right now, I can't blame you for sticking it out there. So, Flavien, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. Continued success, my man.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And, pretty happy. It was a great talk with you guys.
Absolutely.
Good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Be safe.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Flavien Pratt will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back for this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes. All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. And I feel like there was a West Point horse that made some kind of news over the holiday break. Have we talked about him yet? John, help me out here. Who am I thinking of?
Was it that horse that just broke his maiden for maiden 10? No.
Flightline.
Right.
He is part owned by West Point. I totally forgot about that. Just kidding. I mean, I don't even know where, I don't even know how you could possibly top that as a West Point partner, watching him just roll through the stretch in the Malibu like that. I mean, that's why you get in the business. That's why you get involved in the first place. And he was obviously a $1 million purchase at the FASIC Saratoga sale in 2019, owned in partnership with Ronis Racing, Sienna Farm, Summerwind Equine, and Woodford Racing. So congratulations to all the partners on what is a phenomenally, phenomenally exciting animal. And we hope to see him a bunch more. And also, not to be outdone, West Point's Obesos, who I liked a little bit on the Kentucky Derby trail last year, didn't really pan out as a three-year-old, but he kicked off his four-year-old campaign with a win on Sunday at the fairgrounds. He was fifth in last year's Kentucky Derby. This was his first start since May. So he looks to have an exciting four-year-old campaign ahead of him. definitely a very nice horse. Kind of that big, has a big late closing kick. So would expect to see him in some two turns grade stakes and probably some grade ones later on this year. So congratulations to the partners on Albasos and of course, on the monster that is Flightline. We finally had some very, very deserved comeuppance for one of the true villains of the game while we were away. This was Friday, December 17th. Jorge Navarro, the self-proclaimed juice man, got the maximum allowable sentence. In his case, he got sentenced to 5 years in prison, probably will do a little bit less than that, maybe 3 years. But it was very, very satisfying, I think, for everybody in the industry to see him get his. And listen, he's not the only guy that's been doing stuff like this over the years, but I thought he was the most flagrant cheater in racing. And just obviously with the juice man Crocs, he was like fully embracing that villainous role. Well, and you end up in prison when you're that big of a villain sometimes, and nobody's going to shed a tear for Jorge Navarro. But I want to talk to Bill, who was there that day covering the court proceedings. Bill, what were your impressions?
A couple things. First, I need to correct you here, Joe. He's going to serve very close to 5 years. In federal cases, there's no parole. My understanding is you can get a little bit of time off for good behavior, but this is not going to be you're sentenced to 5 years and you're out in 6 months. He's going to spend a long time in prison, close to 5 years. I've covered other trials, but I never covered something of this ilk. And it was a real eye opener. And I don't have anything to compare it to, but, you know, what happened was an ass whooping. I mean, Mary Kay Vicicle, whatever her name is, the judge, she's a badass. And she lit into him every chance she got. And she, for someone who obviously is not a horse racing person, she really got it. She got the depravity of what he did, the lack of contrition, and most importantly, how awful it is to do this to an animal, to put these kind of drugs into an animal and probably killed XY Jet along the way because of this. So he just got obliterated in this thing, which was good to see. So, you know, he could have got a couple breaks here and there. She should have given him, could have given him less time. She gave him the maximum 5 years. And on top of that, she actually said, "I feel terrible. I can't give you more." I mean, I love that, you know, that the law only allowed her to give him 5 years. They are going to say he's got to pay back $25 million to people that he cheated. I don't think he has 25 cents would be my guess. But nonetheless, whatever money he has, they're going to take it from him. And as we learned before, that they think that when he gets out of jail, he's probably going to be deported to Panama. So, I mean, he hit the cold try there. Jail, take away all your money and we're sending you back to a country you haven't been to in 35 years and apparently don't know anybody. And you know what? It was great to see. And the other thing too, he always, like you said, he embraced this juice man thing. He was an arrogant SOB. I mean, really, really arrogant, a tough guy. And I'm, you know, again, just having those Crocs, how ridiculous is that? To see this, again, to see this piece of garbage get up on and address the court. And, you know, he says the things you got to say. "I'm a changed man. I'm so sorry. Blah, 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 blah." Bunch of garbage. But he wept like a little baby. I mean, come on, Jorge. You know, like there's so much for the image of Jorge Navarro, the juice man, the arrogant leading trainer at Monmouth 714 times. He got smacked around really, really good. And right about February 15th, because they gave him a little extra time to get his affairs in order, he will be heading to a federal penitentiary somewhere. Glad to see it.
Wow. So, Bill, two questions for you because you were there. One is, what were the actual charges that he was convicted on? Because I know the Fed had a bunch of different charges that they kind of threw onto the wall.
Well, he did. He did cut somewhat of a deal. He was charged with this thing that we learn all along. So you got to remember, there's no law against drugging a racehorse to try to win a race. There's nowhere, you're not going to find that in any statutes anywhere. So they get him as misbranding and drug adulteration. And he got it convicted on one count of that. They did originally charge him with two counts. They brought it down to one. And the maximum sentence for that is 5 years. Now, only a handful of people have been sentenced so far, but other guys have gotten like 18 months. some of these drug suppliers and whatnot. So, you know, so that to the judge, that shows her feeling that, you know, of all the bad guys, this was the worst of the worst. I'll give someone else 18 months. He's getting 5 years, and I wish I could have given him 10.
And my other question is, has a judge been assigned to the Jason Service case?
It's the same judge, this Mary Kay.
So that's actually bicycle. Encouraging.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, she was, like I said, I mean, boy, I mean, she did not let up on him 1 second. And, you know, so yeah, and that's the other thing too. You know, I'm sure Jason Service and his lawyers were watching this carefully, and they couldn't have been happy by what they saw. You know, this is the other of the daily, the one in 1A of the Juice Chronicles. You know, they got number one. Now 1A is coming up, Jason Service, and they're dealing with a system that went as hard on Jorge Navarro as was possible.
And I think is like, I'm not sure without USADA coming aboard, I'm not sure how many more guys we're going to get to point and laugh at. And that's a really unfortunate thing, because there's so many people who are just so deserving of this kind of comeuppance in the business. Navarro was the biggest one, the biggest, most flagrant asshole of them all that we're just all so happy to see put under the jail and get deported and all that. There's so many other arrogant people walking around this business and just, you know, with this I can't be touched attitude. And yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know how many more of those pounds of flesh we're going to get, but yeah, this was super satisfying. And it was just one of those things where, you know, you don't feel like you get justice a lot, not just in this business, but in life in general. And this was one time where justice was served. And I think Bill's point is correct, that the judge did a good job kind of, you know, very, very correctly assessing how evil and how cartoonishly villainous Jorge Navarro was in his business and the kind of damage he did, especially to horses like XY Jet. So, yeah, in the words of Andy Cohen, sayonara, sucka. See you never. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the KTOB, the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders, is a trade organization consisting of owners, breeders, trainers, and associate members. The KTOB promotes the thoroughbred industry on a local, state, and national level through their involvement in services and information, simulcasting and purses, horse health and research, farmland conservation, and industry promotion. One of the latest positive impacts that the KTA and KTOB has made was their organization of a GoFundMe page. We put this on the screen last show, that's raised over $500,000 for people affected by the recent catastrophic tornadoes in Western Kentucky. 315 industry members donated to the cause, and the funds went for both immediate response and long-term recovery. The first of TD Thornton's Derby Top 12 was released this week, and 11 of the 12 horses mentioned are Kentucky breds, which speaks to the quality, obviously top level competitiveness of Kentucky breds. 17 of the 20 Kentucky Derby entrants last year were Kentucky breds, and all 14 runners in the 2021 Kentucky Oaks were bred in Kentucky. Also, the Kentucky bred of the week is Newgrange, who won Saturday's Grade 3 Sham Stakes. Son of Violence was bred in Kentucky by Jack Mandato, and Black Rock Thoroughbreds is undefeated in his first two starts. And also in 2021, 72% of stakes races in America were won by Kentucky breds. So obviously still dominating the industry.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
We've saved the best for last. The deals will be exceptional. The Stallions premiere. The time is now.
All right, how do you get out of my auction zone? Turn it up a little bit, Jerry. How do you get out of the man? How do you get out of the man? What do you get? How do you get out of the man? One down. How do you get out of the man? $5 million on her. Look at $5 million. Get her started.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Minnesota Thoroughbred Association, where it's hosting their 2022 online stallion season auction now through January 10th. The auction features more than 50 premier stallions from Kentucky, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, and Minnesota. Includes up-and-coming young Kentucky-based sires like Army Mule, Higher Power, Yoshida, Code of Honor, and more. A $1,000 incentive is being offered for this year's auction from the Minnesota Breeders Fund. Any breeder who purchases a stallion season through this auction will receive a $1,000 check when the foal was registered with the Minnesota Racing Commission in 2023. You can check it out at www.thoroughlybred.com. So kind of dovetailing with the last segment, we were talking about Jorge Navarro. One of the things about Navarro that we've talked about on the show and that other people have spoken about is, you know, the kind of the lack of punishment for owners that employed Jorge Navarro. Basically, I think, I can't prove this, but I think knowingly used his services, knowing what he was doing, with the edge he was taking. And, you know, we talked about that intercepted phone call where someone was talking to Navarro about juicing the horse as much as possible and how, why can't we find those people and get them out of the game? They clearly are doing the wrong things. But in that vein, Jeff Gural, who is somebody that Bill has covered, who's he works in New Jersey. He controls the Meadowlands, a couple other harness tracks. He banned 8 owners who had horses with Rene Allard. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Mm-hmm. Who had horses with him. He banned them from his tracks. They sued to get that overturned, and a federal judge dismissed their lawsuit. I think it was a week or two ago. Now, he dismissed it without prejudice, which means that they can file a case again to try to get it overturned. But for now, the ban stands in place from Jeff Gural. And I think he's one of those guys who's like very reform minded. And we kind of need a cop on the beat like him in America. We got a couple of guys who I think are trying to do the right thing, but he's kind of the big cheese right now. But Bill knows more about this than I do. So what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no one else in any kind of horse racing, be it standardbred or thoroughbred, like Jeff Gural, the lengths that he's gone to police his own sport. And, you know, he doesn't take any crap. If he thinks that you've done something wrong, if you're cheating, he'll just throw you out. And, you know, every time he does this, someone sues him. So here's the background. Rene Allard was one of the people involved in the service Navarro thing. You know, terrible allegations about him. It wasn't him talking, but 2 other people were talking about Allard on the wiretaps from the government. And they were joking about the Allard killing fields because he had killed so many horses with drugs. So I don't know what on earth the Justice Department was thinking and why they did this, but they allowed him to keep training if he was doing what is like for thoroughbreds, breaking babies. A training center down in Florida, getting horses ready for their starts, maybe, you know, layup horses, et cetera. None of these horses were going to race anywhere, but he was allowed to do this. And Gural, rightly so, was appalled by this. And he went in, found out which owners were giving Allard horses to train at this training center in Florida, said, how could anybody possibly have anything to do with this or sign off on this guy having anything to do with horses? And he just said, the heck with it. And he banned these owners, 8 of them. So they can't race there. Their horses can't race there. They're not allowed in the premises. And they sued and he won. Now, the moral of the story or the thing is, you know, well, I think one of the great frustrations about everything we've been talking about over these last 2 years, Joe, as you mentioned, that, you know, the owners are complicit. We know that. I mean, probably I would say, you know, 9 out of 10, if maybe not 10 out of 10, knew exactly what was going on with Navarro service, et cetera. And, you know, so they have not been penalized in any way, shape or form. They've gotten away scot-free. Everybody thinks the owner should be made to pay. I don't know what the perfect way to do that is, but Jeff Gural in harness racing found a way. You associate with a guy like this, like Rene Allard, you can't race at my track. Get lost. End of story. See ya.
And I think of anything, like if you want to do like a drug dealing analogy, the owners in a lot of ways are like the kingpins because they're funding all of the stuff, all of the shady stuff below them that goes on. Like you can't have juicing trainers without owners that are complicit and that are enabling them. So I think if anything, they should be even more responsible than the trainers themselves, or at least equally as responsible, because they are an equal cog in that disgusting system. And it's good to see Jeff Gural doing something about it. And, you know, we need more people in racing who are willing to step up. And I think a lot of people in racing, unfortunately, a lot of people have friendships and relationships with a lot of these owners that are doing the wrong things, and a lot of, you know, horsemen's boards and racing commissions, they know these guys and girls, and they don't want to punish them or sanction them because they fill stalls or they're close with each other. But John, you've probably seen that from the inside. I wonder what your thoughts are on that relationship between the owners and the trainers, and then the owners and the people who are tasked with regulating the sport.
Well, there's no question that the owners are, you know, part of the process. And, you know, everyone wants to win. Everyone is in this industry because they want to win. And they want to win, and whether it's to satisfy your ego or your business acumen or just your investment, you want your horse to finish first and you want 60% of the purse. I mean, that's just the way you want to do it. Now, very different organizations and stables do it very different ways. Some breed and are in the process all the way through until the horses are done racing. Others are claiming, others are buying horses at public auction. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to win, and it comes down to, you know, are you going to do the right thing and do the right thing for yourself and for the horse and for the industry, or are you going to give in to, you know, to taking an edge and you know, and doing things that aren't within the rules? And guys, we've talked about this ad nauseum as far as, you know, if you look at the trainers who have been convicted now for cheating, and also who you have a good sneaking suspicion that their trainers are cheating, and you look at who the owner roster is, you're going to see a lot of repeat names. You're going to see a lot of repeat names, a lot of repeat customers. And it's not just by coinkydink. It's not just because, you know, a guy stumbles upon a good trainer and then that trainer gets, you know, gets dazed or gets implemented in some kind of an issue and no longer is training. And then they shift their horses to another trainer who, oh, by the way, also has like a 28% win percentage, and the horses catch a second gear midway down the racetrack. So it's not a matter of, you know, putting their head in the sand and not knowing. They freaking know. They know. They know what's going on, and they are advocating it. They are actually feeding that cheating mentality into the industry because they continue to win. And when they continue to win, their horses get better. And when their horses get better, they get worth more. And then they have more money and more ammunition to repeat the process. It's rinse and repeat all over and over again. And if there's no, you know, consequences for these owners to, you know, go with a non-cheating trainer, other than the fact that, you know, that the trainer himself is going to get indicted for an issue, then why would you do it other than the fact that, you know, for us, it's a matter of I want to be able to look myself in the mirror and go to sleep at night, you know, without worrying about are my horses getting doped and that's why they're winning or not. So it's becoming very, very difficult, to be one of the few Boy Scouts in this industry. And I got to tell you guys that, and this isn't a news break or anything like that, but there are a lot of owners that feel the way I do, which is why am I continuing to beat my head against the wall when the only way these guys are going to get caught is if there's a federal indictment for money laundering, not even for, you know, looking at our own industry. And that's the way they're going to get caught. I mean, it's silly that I think when California came out and said like 99% of their tests, you know, showed that there was no illegal substances being used. Well, yeah, because they're not testing for the right things and nobody knows how to test for those yet. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They say we're a clean race. I'm not picking on California, but they're the ones that came out with the number, you know, that we're obviously clean because 99% of our tests come back clean. And that's not true. You're just not testing for the right things, because obviously there are, you know, there are certainly allegations and reasoning to think that there's cheating going on. So I know I'm going off on a tangent, but at the end of the day, yeah, you got to have the owners have their feet to the fire also, because otherwise they just go to the next trainer that has a high percentage that may or may not be cheating as well.
And that's kind of what was unsaid in what Jorge Navarro said. He was in his defense of himself. He said, it was basically like, I caved to the pressure to win. Like I had all this pressure that I did the wrong things and I became like a bad person because I put so much pressure on myself to win. The pressure on that is also coming from the owners. The owners also put the pressure on the trainers. What are you doing to increase my win percentage? And I get that everybody wants to win, but there should be a very binary thing. Does your trainer's win percentage and results pass the smell test, or does it not? And you should be able to answer that very easily if you're an owner. And a lot of guys just, I think, either don't even want to think about it or know it and don't care that they're employing people that are taking an edge. And there's definitely a lot more dominoes to fall in that regard, I hope, you know, with more reform coming, but not nearly as many as we would have had with USADA in charge. And that's a shame. But I just have one more thing to say about the harness stuff, and it's you go, girl. Come on, John. That was perfect for you. Oh, you're a big pun guy.
That was bad. That wasn't even a good pun. I'm sorry, Joe.
Come on. No, but seriously, but we need a Jeff Gural in Thoroughbred Racing. You go, Gural. I liked it.
Oh.
All right. Let me just do it.
We even got a cringe out of Bill.
Bill gave me a pity laugh. Bill gave me a
pretty stone faced. Bill, did you know that Fonner Park opened up for training?
I saw that. Yes, you sent a string there this year, right?
They'll be there soon. They're going Pony Express. Yeah. And I know this is a little unusual, and we don't usually do this, you know. But 2022 is going to be a new year. I just wanted to wish my compatriot and friend Bill Finley a happy birthday.
Yes.
Happy birthday, buddy.
It was yesterday, but thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
We weren't taping yesterday, but I wanted to wish you a happy... Can you tell the audience how old you are?
38.
38.
Very 38, nice. Yeah.
I think you have socks that are 38 years old. But, well, Bill, you don't look a day over 60. I'm very happy to wish you a happy birthday. Joe and I both consider you, you know, a friend. And we're very pleased that you made it another year, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Happy birthday, Bill. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy Bloodstock had a fantastic 2021 with their sales grads with 161 winners of 241 races. They have 29 horses entered for the upcoming Keeneland January sale, including short yellings by First Crop sires Matoli, Catholic Boy, Yoshida, Preservationist, and more. We'll definitely go visit Tommy and Wendy in the barn area at Keeneland January. We'll be right back after this message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse, every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up and down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
All right, so that's going to do it for the first TDN Writers Room of 2022, brought to you, as always, by Keeneland. Keeneland January sale starts next week, January 10th through the 13th. You can learn more and see the catalog at january.keeneland.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Flavian Pratt, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you all so much for watching. Hope you had a great new year. We'll see you next week.